The Walking Dead Week in Review, Episode 36, the Season 3 Preview Show, begins now.
What's cracking? What's cracking? My name is Noel G. I was one of the Vatos in Vatos the first season, which was the fourth episode from The Walking Dead AMC Live. You're listening to the Creeper Cast, homeboy. Don't move or else we'll come and get you.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Walking Dead Week in Review, brought to you by the Creeper Cast. I'm Jason, and with me always is Jeff, and for those of you that don't know, we've also got Mike with us, who is another creep.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said about me, Jason.
Hey, you know what? You're in good company.
You're amongst creeps here.
That's right.
At least two. At least two. But why are we here today, Jason?
Well, we're here because this past weekend, AMC had their Walking Dead weekend preview, season 3 preview, which was awesome. We got to see the entire lineup of The Walking Dead. So for those of you that did not listen to it before or did not watch it before, you got to see the entire series from beginning to end in one weekend. Without having to, you know, buy it on Netflix and stuff like that. And then we also got a special Talking Dead where they kind of sort of almost gave out info for season 3.
Yeah, kind of sort of almost.
Kind of sort of almost. They did a really good job stonewalling.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
There was a couple of times, though, where I think it was pretty obvious that somebody let something slip they didn't necessarily intend. But who knows? Maybe they did intend it, or maybe they just intended to not tell us anything.
I'm of the assumption that every single thing that slipped was an intentional slip.
Intentionally there to make us think something's going to happen that isn't. But
no, or, you know, they wanted to get this info out, and they didn't know how or who, so they just went. I want to say we've got quite a few people in the chat room right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of them popping in and out. This is getting exciting.
Yeah, we've got Love's Dragons. We got Nesabu. We've got quite a few Anons, as I'm calling them.
Yes.
Anon 87680 and Anon 8272, Anon 8217. Hey, I want to thank you guys for joining us. This is going to be an awesome episode.
Especially since this came as a surprise to everybody except me.
Yes.
Because I thought of it as soon as I found out about this marathon happening.
So I got to ask you, before we get into some of the stuff with season 3, did you watch the black and white?
No, I didn't. But can't you watch it on the DVDs?
Well, that was the thing is, I don't know if it, I have the DVD and I don't remember if there was like a black and white, you know, way of watching it. There might have been, and I just didn't look at it.
No, I did watch the trailer. I did watch the trailer, you know, when they were showing it in between segments and stuff. And it looks awesome. In black and white, just from the trailer, so I can imagine this whole show has got to be awesome. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched it. And, I mean, it wasn't bad. You know, I'm personally a fan of black and white horror. I think it's just, you know, ingrained in us that, you know, if something is scary in color, it's even scarier for some reason in black and white. Right. But at the same time, watching it, it's not like they colorized it black and white where they really crushed the blacks or anything. Basically, all they did is take the color out of it. And so it's like grayscale, which has happened to me on quite a few movies where, like, the S video of my DVD player would fail. And that's what it kind of reminded me of is I'm watching it and it's like, oh, I need to replace my S video cable. So I wasn't too impressed with it. I would have been more impressed if they actually, did some high contrast black and white rather than just taking the color out.
But as they explained, the reasoning for them going black and white with the premiere episode was to emulate the comic book. Do you think then that the color the way they desaturated it made it look more like a comic book panel?
No, because if you look at the comic book panel, they do really good job with high contrast. You know, the blacks are really black and the whites are really white. And, you know, there's definite angular lines and stuff in there, which you didn't get with this because, and it wouldn't have been hard for them to do. All they had to do was basically turn up the contrast.
Yeah. Okay.
So, hey, and we've got really Mr. Killawilba in the chat room, so I want to say hi to our favorite Aussie.
Yes, most definitely.
So I hope you're getting better and everything is starting to feel good. He injured himself a little bit, yes. So, all right, so on to the Season 3, some of the previews that happened. So there were quite a few things that they talked about. One of the first things that executive producer Glenn Mazzara was talking about was the Ricktatorship, shall we say.
Yeah, I love the way you said that, too.
You know, and even I thought it was just a fan thing calling it the Ricktatorship. But, you know, I guess according to him, even the people on the on set are calling it the Ricktatorship.
Now, I remember hearing something about that not too long ago, and I was trying to remember if it was because I've been reading the comics or rereading them, and I couldn't remember if it was something that was in the comics or if it was something that, you know, was thrown out of the show or, you know, now it was like you said, you know, fans started or whatever. So,
see, that was always my assumption. It was a fan started thing, but either one way or another, it made its way onto set. And so we have the Ricktatorship, and I want to just play a quick soundbite of what Glenn had to say about the Ricktatorship, and then we'll talk about what we think is going to happen.
Glenn being Glenn Mazzara, not
Glenn Mazzara, not yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think what Rick has to really worry about is how far can he push these people?
Yeah.
And everybody's going to have to step up. Daryl has to be the new number two to take over Shane's spot.
Right.
And everybody's going to be pushed beyond their limits. That's exciting to watch.
That's exciting to watch. So, I mean, is it a good thing that he's, you know, running into this? Now, it is following the graphic novels closer.
Mm-hmm.
To an extent, yeah.
How so? Can you elaborate?
Well, if you've read the comics now, and I'm not talking about the individual issues, I'm talking more the full size graphic novels that, you know, came out afterwards.
Right. Yeah, they're just collections of the individual comics, but yeah.
Right. But what I'm saying is by the end of the first collection, they were already at the prison. Right. Shane was dead. By the end of he should have been dead by the end of the first season if they were actually following the comics.
Right. And they were talking about that was an intentional change.
Right. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that it's for me, it's just like what we talked about with like the Sookie Stackhouse and the True Blood. It's still the Walking Dead universe. Just a different Walking Dead universe where they're changing certain aspects of it. Because again, who's the old guy?
Dale.
Herschel.
Dale.
Oh, Dale.
Not Herschel, but Dale. He was still alive well into getting to the prison, and yet he's dead by the end of season, you know, the season we just ended.
Right. And, in fact, if I remember correctly, Shane doesn't even make it to the farm, does he?
No, because they're still out in the wilderness.
Yeah, that's what I thought when Carl shoots him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and that was the thing. Carl shot him not because Rick had already shot him and he reanimated. Carl just shot him to protect his dad.
Right. Right. And by now, did Carl lose his eye yet in the graphic novel when they reached the...
Now, the one I just ended, and I don't want to give anything away because...
I give stuff away. People read the comics all the time.
Yeah. I just finished where the prison is overrun by the governor, you know, before the governor dies. He still has his sight by then.
Okay.
So
I'm trying to remember because I remember flying through and reading a bunch of them, And so now I'm trying to remember exactly where people
lost. Yeah, we tried to read
things.
Like the first 60 or something like that in over the break so far. I don't know if you have, because I know we were swapping them. But I think I gave you the first 60 one point.
And I read them all in a matter of a couple days.
Yeah, I mean, and I've been getting them from the library. Now, my thing, you know, when I got to the end of the I think I'm on number 10, either 8 or 10 is the one I left on. Like I said, it's where the prison has basically been overrun. You know, I'm wondering how far, considering we're only doing, 13 episodes per season?
I believe it's 16 this coming season.
Yeah, I believe they were greenlit for 16 this season.
Yeah, 16, so. Season 3.
Well, so we're getting more and more episodes, which is good because there's so much that they, I'm not saying necessarily left out, but they kind of had to skip over. There's so much that happens at the prison and then in Woodbury with the governor. And then, you know, at the end of that particular graphic novel set that I read, literally, like, everybody's dead except for Carl and Rick. And I'm just wondering, you know, how close they're going to, you know.
Well, and you know what? They even touched on that last night. So let me play. Let me play.
The Talking Dead, they talked about that.
Let me play that for us. So this is going to be David Alpert, who's one of the executive producers, basically talking about how they're killing everybody.
Honestly, the thing that excites me most is we're going to kill so many people this season. This is like we're going to kill walkers. We're going to kill people. We're going to kill cast members. We're going to kill people that you care and love, and it's going to be awesome.
Which is something that I'm loving about the graphic novel, and I'm really loving about the show. Which is so many times you watch a TV show, you watch MacGyver, okay?
Yeah.
And no matter what crazy shit MacGyver's in, you know he's going to get out of it.
Right, right. You can't kill off the main character is pretty much the golden rule.
Right. But with this show, I swear it's in their contract that they never know when they're going to be offed.
Right, and that's, like you're saying, that's what I really loved about at least the graphic novels, and I kind of hope that they stick to it. You know, and obviously they have changed things, like I said, with Dale dying before they even get to the prison.
Shane lasting longer than he was supposed to.
Right, exactly.
But Kirkman himself has even said, though, that he's pretty much insisted that the show stick close enough to the comic books to where things like where he would just, you know, eliminate characters on a whim.
Right.
In the comic book is they want, you know, he wants, and by the sounds of the way Mazzara and Alpert talk about it, is they want the show to kind of continue that tradition. Is just when you think, you know, like right now, I think that they're still sticking to the, you know, the five group, thing where you got five people that you pretty much know are going to carry on to the next.
Well,
I'm hoping that's going to change.
In the comic book, Lori dies at the prison.
Mm.
Do you think she's going to die? People in the chat room, do you think Lori is going to die at the prison? I want you guys, this is like a random poll, you know, throw up a big yes or no or whatever. Because,
well, see, and that's the other thing that's slightly different for me. I mean, I guess in just my perception of it is, the way the graphic novels roll out, it's like, at the beginning of one or the end of one to the beginning of the next, like all of a sudden Lori is not only pregnant, but she's showing and they've been at the prison for a while. And you get the feeling that time is passing and we're not being bogged down by every single everyday detail.
Right. You know, and that's going to be one of the hardest parts about the prison, I think. So far we have two yeses to one no in the chat room.
And they're actually cutting, like, I think they're cutting really quickly to different sections of the prison, because they even discussed on The Talking Dead, where Mazzara and even Kirkman mentioned, is that there's actually a lot that builds up in the prison story as far as, like, the governor taking over when he does. It's actually a takeover process, whereas it looks to me like they're just going to jump straight to he's in control.
Right. Yeah, and then you have...
Okay, you guys Lori must have watched a completely different episode than I did, because I'm not – I didn't see any of that.
You have Lori giving birth in the comic book at the prison. So right now, she is basically a month pregnant.
Right.
You know, she is just barely – you know, so we still got 8 months that she has to be at the prison to give birth there.
So as, right. I guess I don't remember this portion of the comic books then. Where was the rise of the governor? Did that take place with the group there?
Well, when they took siege on the governor, that was after Lori gave birth.
Okay. Right. There was a book. There was an actual prose novel called The Rise of the Governor, which takes place basically when Rick is in the hospital and when he comes out of the coma and what have you. And it talks about who the governor is, and it ends – as they're building the or fortifying the town of Woodbury. Then when we get into the comics, in the graphic novels, when they get to the prison, then we kind of they go exploring and they find the town of Woodbury or what have you. And the governor at that point, the governor is fully established, and like they actually said on the show, that. You know, it looks like an idyllic little town, you know, somehow surviving, you know, the zombie apocalypse or what have you. But if you peek below the surface, there's some really disturbing stuff going on. And the governor doesn't actually know about the prison.
No.
Until the you know, Rick's group shows
up.
Until
our survivors get there, right? Here's what they here's the actual soundbite.
Well, Woodbury's run by the governor. And it's as when you first arrive there, you think it's fairly normal. It looks like a small town, and it's full of small town people.
Yeah.
But if you pry a little more deeply, you'll find that there's something rotten in Woodbury.
Okay. So yeah, we've got Woodbury. We have the rise of the governor. And they talk a little bit about who's the governor. Here's Glenn. Glenn Mazzara talking about the governor and a little bit of his background.
The governor is a guy who believes that this zombie apocalypse is all about him. That somewhere down the road, history's going to look back, and there was one guy who kept the light on, who kept humanity going, and he thinks that's him, that's his mission, and he'll do anything to make sure that he's that guy.
So that's modern day, and then we got a little bit of a background to him.
Yeah, we're using some of that. I mean, he's a guy that sees this as his opportunity to get on to, you know, history stage, and he thinks it's all about him, and that's a pretty fun character to write.
So if I remember correctly, the governor was just an everyday guy. I don't remember what his job was. I know they said it, but he was just like a normal guy. He wasn't like a military man, wasn't anything special. But he obviously was enough of an alpha to be able to take the situation and get people to follow him and basically ruled with an iron fist.
Well, I read the novel, so I've got more of a background because if I remember right, the comics really don't, you know, expand on it. They just kind of say, you know, he just kind of stepped up to the plate. They've got he realizes that, you know, to keep the people entertained and what have you, or to keep them from fighting with each other, that's why he, you know, creates the fight pit. And
right, yeah, well, yeah, it's his form of the Colosseum.
Right, exactly. And because he happened to step up and just have some good ideas, you know, and he tried. He, to me, it's like he knew just enough to what needed to be done. But at the same time, like, oh, no, I'm not doing anything special. Thereby actually ingratiating himself more with the populace. And then, of course, he was able to handpick the people that would follow his orders without question until we see later on that, you know, some of the people in the comics are starting to go, hey, that ain't, you know.
He's a modern day Caesar is what he
is. And it's not until the very end, you know, because he's telling them in the comics anyways, you know, that the people in the prison are, you know, they're killing their people, the Woodbury people. They want to take their stuff when it's all in actuality. It's the governor wants what the prison has. And it's not until the very end when he orders his people to, you know, just wipe them out. And that's when Lori and the baby are killed that the people go, oh, wait a minute. You know, it's a little late now. But,
remember, Lori is killed, the baby isn't. No, the baby in the comic books, if I remember correctly, is raised by Glenn and Maggie.
Okay, well, then maybe it's that's in the next episode, because the last panel that I remember, I remember the panel where she gets shot and she's holding the baby.
Yeah, the baby escapes.
And then the last panel of that particular graphic novel is Rick holding Carl by himself. So, I mean, I actually turned to Jen and I went, you know, they just killed the baby. And so, you know, maybe, but basically the fact that, you know, he ordered them to kill a woman and her baby, that's when the governor gets shot and thrown to the wolves, so to speak.
Right.
And this is where we need Casey, actually, because
I know, because Casey probably... she is our resident Walking Dead.
She's our comic book
wiki.
Person.
She's our wiki.
Yeah, our Walking Dead comic wiki. And on that, I mean, we've done all this talk about the governor and such, so I want to just quickly, you know, jump into, like, so we have, what's his name, Daniel Morrissey, as coming in as the governor. People might recognize them from British series, including State of Play, Meadowlands, The Deal, and Blackpool. I actually don't know the guy. I know that if you compare the look, you know, the behind-the-scenes photos of him to the comic book, he's nowhere near. But
right, and I saw one quick photo, and maybe it was on that, you know, video file that you gave me or whatever, or maybe it was on Facebook, something they were talking about. There was a picture of him, and I'm like, no, because the way the governor looked, it was like this greaser, you know, with shoulder length, greasy black
hair. Yeah, he's a biker-looking guy, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting change.
I take it back. Judith, who's the baby, was killed. As they're fleeing the prison, Judith's life came to an abrupt tragic end as she and her mother were killed in the final stages of the Woodbury Army's assault at the prison. So that I was mistaking her for Sophia.
Oh, well, Sophia we know became a zombie, so.
Well, in the TV show, but yeah, in the comic book, she doesn't. She right. runs off with and becomes basically the illegitimate child of Maggie and Glenn.
Right. And to kind of get us back to the prison a little bit, and because, you know, I mean, what the hell? Let's rip off The Talking Dead. I mean, Chris Hardwick gets to do all the fun stuff, and here we are doing even more fun stuff. But we're going to steal one of the questions from the show, because I have a poll, because I'm looking at their polls, and I'm really curious about what you guys think about some of these answers. I mean... You know, I've argued with people about them already, is what is the best place to live during a zombie apocalypse? Would it be a farm, which we discovered in the show, didn't do any good? A campground, which is what's the difference from a farm? A prison or an RV?
Prison.
I have to agree with what they said on The Talking Dead. Definitely a prison because of this.
In our world now, right, we think of a prison as something you want to avoid. It's sort of where it's the drain where all sort of the dregs of society sort of go. It's something you try to stay away from, right? But the very things that keep those prisoners in, right, that sort of keep them us safe on the outside is exactly what we're going to want in this new world. Right. So going there, this becomes an item of hope. It becomes a sort of the idea that a prison could become, you know, whereas a farm didn't work, right, but a prison would, like there's something very interesting that we're saying there.
So let's see, do I want to be in a house with a bunch of open fields where anything can attack me with no fortification, or do I basically want a modern-day castle?
Yes.
Yeah.
A modern-day castle. Which I'm going to go with, which I also want to, you know, not to derail us from the show, because this kind of follows that same kind of thing, is did you see the posting that Loves Dragons had put on our Facebook about the 8 houses that are, you know, that like,
yes.
Realtors.com?
Yes.
That was quite entertaining. And of course, I spent a lot of time debating it, you know, before I made my choices and then continued to debate it later, figuring that we could have a good discussion on this at some point. So maybe there's more Walking Dead Weekend reviews between now and the show starting based on that kind of stuff.
Yes, I'm trying to look it up. I actually found somewhere, and I have to find it again, so I'm going to do this while we're talking. There is a company that is selling for $20,000 a zombie preparedness kit. With everything you need to survive a zombie apocalypse.
Yes, I saw that. In fact, I liked it on Facebook. I don't have that kind of money right now, but But I mean, and these are things that I think we should do an episode on, where we talk about the real life, you know, what's really going on in the real world when it comes to preparing for the zombie apocalypse and such.
Well, because isn't we know that it's what here I now. Do with my zombie survival guide?
Oh, I know. I'm not necessarily talking about that. I'm talking about like the things that are currently out there that people are discussing, and we can debate whether or not they fit into your survival situation.
Okay.
Because we know the zombie apocalypse is upon us.
Yeah, there's been quite a few people with faces eaten off now.
Yeah.
So it's slowly coming around. We just didn't think that it was going to come from bath salts.
Right. Now, you mentioned Lori, and your question was whether or not Lori was going to survive this season. That's pretty much what you say by the time they leave the prison, which I'm hoping they're going to, you know, by the end of the season, they'll be leaving the prison. And maybe that'll be a continuous theme of theirs, is every season being a different location. But and I understand that you have a cut, though, about, you know, what Gail had to say about Lori and her situation at this point.
Lori with the blood on her hands?
Yes.
All right.
But at the same time, she has blood on her hands, like anyone would. What part did she play in building up to Rick having to kill Shane? And not only that, Carl having to kill the zombie Shane.
I think in the season finale of season two, that was probably the biggest shocker to me of anything.
Was Lori
more of
Rick?
Lori's reaction than anything that they found or anything that happened. Was more of the fact that, you know, I was waiting when he was telling Lori about it. I was waiting for her to comfort him, or I was waiting for her to feel relief or something like that. But when she like turned her back at Rick. That
it was a, it was a real
letdown. Set that up.
Oh
yeah, exactly. I mean that's the case of somebody who is like basically trying to manipulate from all sides, and then suddenly, you know, upset because it worked.
Right, exactly. You know, I mean, what'd she expect him to do? You got to do something about him, you know, but not kill him. I mean, the only other option is to like lock him in a room somewhere forever that he can't get out of. Which essentially is killing him.
Yeah. See, now my question, my answer as far as the, do I think they're going to kill Lori off in this, you know, by the time they leave the prison, is that I'm not too sure exactly what to think of that. I mean, as long as she's continually, I mean, the reason why Shane lasted as long as he did is because he was really good tension and conflict. And now Lori is the tension and conflict. Granted, they're going to bring in a new bad guy. But that's, yeah, I mean, there's been bad guys all the way through the seasons, and none that lasted as long as Shane. And he also added tension to the group, tension to the, you know, the family, of Rick's family and all of that. And now Lori is that same type of tension. So I think it really depends on whether or not they can convince us at some point in this season that Lori is worth saving. Because I really think at this point, the only way you can kill her off is to convince her she's worth it. That way we care.
Well, yeah. you know, she's going to have to do some sort of about face, I think, to kind of bring us back into rooting for her. Because I think everybody is against her right now.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And in the comic books, from what I understand, everybody, you know, I mean, KC had even told us at one point where Lori was just a complete and total bitch in the comics. So.
Well, she's getting that way in the TV show, too.
I didn't think she was a complete utter bitch. I just thought she was more whiny. You know, I mean, here she's. And I realized the situation changed. You know, she fell in love with a man who becomes a cop. That's what he does. He helps people.
Right.
And he saves people. And then. Now he's thrust in the comics, especially he's thrust into this position of leadership, especially when, you know, he basically takes over the group, not only because he shows up, but then, you know, he has to kill Rick, but Shane is killed. You know, he's thrust in this position of leadership. He feels responsible for these people. And I remember there are several scenes in the comics where Lori is just damn near having a breakdown every time. Oh, he's going off to save another person, but what about me and Carl and the baby? And, you know, it's like, well, give Carl a damn gun, you know, and you got it.
And the way they worked that angle in the show, though, was more like if she was bitchy. Every time Rick was going to go off and do something, she was bitchy about it.
Right.
Rather than, oh, the world's going to end if you leave us. So I think that's where this particular Laurie is. They're going to have to, I think, you know, this is my own point of view from a, you know, as a writer standpoint, is that they're going to have to somehow make us care about her before they're going to be able to kill her and it matter.
Right.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, and then the other thing to think about is, as far as the baby goes, I'm going to circle us back to that. I'm gonna call her Judith because that's her name in the comic book. As far as, you know, Judith goes, since we already got rid of Sophia, who is supposed to be a survivor in the comic book, to me, they have to kind of balance that a little bit to add some tension. And I think keeping Judith there would create enough tension because it's a helpless, defenseless baby. So that adds another level of protection that they have to have. What the heck is playing now?
I don't know. You're in charge of that.
See, I have no idea what the hell that was.
So it's stupid pop-ups.
As long as that's all the pop-up was, instead of like, oh, baby, you know.
Yeah, I'm on the Walking Dead Wikia, so evidently they have a pop-up on there somewhere. But so, yeah, in order to, you know, because they already got rid of Sophia, who we know survives, by keeping Judith around, they would have, you know, something else, you know, another child there that they would have to protect. Just like they had to protect Sophia, they had to protect Carl. Now Carl's kind of coming into his own. Carl, you know, Carl said that, or Carl, Chandler.
Yeah, Chandler.
Chandler said that I'm pulling a Talking Dead calling.
yeah, calling them by their character name.
Yes. even Chandler said that Carl's basically, without use, not his words, my words, Carl's going to become sort of a badass.
Yeah. Well, the way Chandler put it is he's turning to the dark side.
Right. So let me play that real quick and so that you know what we're talking about.
All right, well, he's growing up. He's definitely not a kid anymore. He's going to the dark side. No more crying or being told to get in the house, of course. And then he's more of a soldier, and he's more part of the group now, you know. Yeah. No more stay in the house.
So, you know, we've gotten rid of one of the children, Sophia.
I mean, Madison told you off in everything, and you still can't remember her name. You just have to keep on dissing the little girl, don't you?
I do, don't I? Sophia, we got rid of her, you know, and she was the one that was really the defenseless person, her and Carl. Now Carl's not defenseless anymore. So you've taken away a lot of, you know, the watch out for the little ones kind of mentality. So now people can concentrate more on, you know, basically saving their own skin. By adding a baby to this, now you have this whole other dynamic of not just saving yourself, but having to save this little defenseless baby.
But in the comics, too, there were several other children as well. I mean, not just Sophia and Carl.
True.
So, you know, that's one of the other adjustments that the show has made. Well,
the show has started off with several more children. I don't know what happened to – we don't really necessarily know what happened to all of them. But some of them just actually broke off from the original group. Like the one family that decided they were going to go off on their own had two kids with them.
Right.
Well, see, it's been a while since I've seen the first, you know, six episodes or whatever, so I don't remember that.
You could have watched it this weekend.
I don't have cable, dude.
Wow, what kind of world do you live in?
I know.
Very sad, lonely one.
That's why he reads.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I do the literary corner of this show.
Of the next show, but yeah.
Well, that too. But anyways, the other thing, and they mentioned this on that The Talking Dead there, is they don't – somebody asked, and I don't remember if it was Drew Carey. It might have been Drew Carey. Was asking about, you know, what happened to, you know, the black guy and his kid that saved Rick in like the first episode.
Right, Morgan. You know, we've been asking that.
Yeah,
ever
we've
since
been. Everybody's been asking about Morgan and Dwayne.
You know, it's like, you know, what happened to them? And then they said something about a helicopter, and I don't remember that either. So maybe I.
Well, there was a helicopter that the walkers followed.
Oh, right. That's how they got to the farm.
Right.
Right.
And then they were going to pass the farm until somebody shot something.
Until Rick shot Shane.
Yeah.
Right.
And then
they
turned and beelined it right towards the gunshot.
Right. Right. Okay. Now I remember.
So, we don't know much about them, and nor will they tell us, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
So, one thing we do know, though, is this.
So, first, Merle's coming back. It's coming back. The thing to know about Merle is that Merle, you can never know what to expect from Merle. So, Merle is, you know, you can expect the unexpected.
I expect anger and racism.
There'll be a little bit of that.
Yeah.
So there, but there'll be also be more.
Okay.
It's a newer, kinder, gentler Merle.
So, Merle coming back, minus one hand.
Actually, he said his hand grew back.
Yeah.
minus, but, you know, he and Daryl weren't even in the comics, as far as I remember, at all.
Daryl wasn't.
Daryl wasn't. No.
No, Daryl was actually created specifically for Norman Reedus.
Well, I love it.
Because Norman tried out for somebody else, and they said, hey.
But, yeah, Merle's coming back. Now, the question is how is Merle coming back? Is he going to come back and, you know, become a part of the group again? Is he going to be welcomed in with open hand? Or
hand.
Or did he end up in Woodbury and become one of the enforcers at Woodbury?
I think he's going to be one of the dark secrets of Woodbury.
Yeah, that's really the only way I could see him showing up. You know, because when they left whatever city, Atlanta, in the first season, you know, when they got out of there and then they headed towards the CDC, Merle had no idea where they were going. So, so he survives cutting off his own hand, not bleeding to death. Apparently was able to stave off, you know, any sort of infection.
He had a lot of antibiotics thanks to venereal diseases.
Right, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. And obviously he knows where to find them.
Right, so I mean...
Both of them.
Yeah.
You know, unless, you know, I mean, you're going to... Okay, we're already suspending disbelief because, you know, we're dealing with a show about a zombie apocalypse. But you want me to suspend it to the point where he somehow tracks them through all of the crap, you know, because not only did they go, you know, leave the city, go to the CDC, then they ended up on Herschel's farm, and now they're out in the wilderness and they're going to go come across the prison. You expect me to suspend my disbelief to the point where somehow he's just going to happen across them.
Well, you know, what they don't tell you is that, Andrea's Twinkie obsession, she left a lot of Twinkie wrappers behind, and he just kept following them.
Yeah, I mean,
I just suddenly felt we were talking about Zombieland for a second here.
That's yeah, I was that just saying.
It's like, Twinkies? What? What did I miss?
Would you like Butterfingers better? Woody Harrelson
and his obsession for a Twinkie.
Yeah. What was his name? Tallahassee? Or
yeah, Tallahassee. There you go.
But, no, I think, you know, I can honestly see him coming back as being one of the governor's gladiators, more or less.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that extreme, though, just because of the way they made it sound, is that he's going to be a kinder, gentler Merle. So I think it's really going to come off. He's going to probably be more of a member of the town who, like you mentioned earlier, didn't even really know about the prison and all that. But I think he's going to, you know, be more of a like a secret, like a silent, you know, agent
right.
that walks amongst you know, that, said, that like, you know, lives with the rest kinder, of the town people.
When she said a kinder, more gentle, or when he said that kinder, more gentler, gentle Merle, I think he was being sarcastic.
Yeah.
Well, I think a certain level of sarcasm has to be taken with 10% seriousness. So I think he's gonna kind of have this, you know, he's gonna act pretty much brainwashed, and then we're gonna find out that he's just the same old badass guy we knew he was to begin with.
So let's take us to one of the new main characters. That would be Michonne.
Before we do that really quickly, I want to, you know, go into another poll question because this leads to Michonne.
Okay.
Is what's the ideal weapon to have during the zombie apocalypse? A gun, a machete, a katana, a crossbow, or a brick?
For me, a machete. for hand to hand. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go with. I mean, a crossbow is good for. Well, I mean, no, I mean it's good for distance and it's silent, but if your aim sucks, then yeah. You know. And whereas a katana or a machete, you know, you just keep that bad boy sharp, and off comes the head.
Right, and then you have a problem
with... machete,
with,
you have more of a hack and slash situation.
Right, machete is more of a melee weapon, which is what's good about it, is it's got the weight behind it, where you don't have to have a lot of skill with it to be able to do damage. Jason Voorhees demonstrated that.
Well, and whereas I agree, though, that, you know, with what you're saying about the machete and what, it, you know, obvious about the crossbow is all you have to have is decent aim and you're going to take them out a lot quieter. I am a katana fan, up close, personal, and very sharp blade.
Yeah, the problem with a katana, though, is that most people are not trained with a katana. They don't realize that a katana is not a hacking weapon. It's actually a slicing weapon. And if you actually look at the clip that they showed of Michonne, when she's getting the aspirin,
it's a slash.
When she does her swipes, she's not just hacking; she's actually doing using the katana the way it's designed, which is you get the blade, and as you cut into something, you pull it in towards you, so that it actually cuts like a butter knife or like a knife would, rather than just hack right into it. Well, most people wouldn't do that; they'd cut straight into something, the blade would get jammed or the blade would break.
Yeah.
The other problem with a katana is that unless you have a real katana blade, i.e. one that's been pounded and folded thousands of times.
Well, 1,500 is the average.
Yeah, okay. 1,500 times, they're not going to be strong at all. Most modern katana blades that you find at, a flea market or something are just molded aluminum.
Yeah, well, they can't even hold edges, most of them.
Right.
Excuse me. Well, and they're going to, if you guys have seen the movie Paul with Simon Pegg.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
You know, when he goes to pull out, you think he's going to do this whole badass thing with it, with his, katana, whatever he starts to whip it out, and it breaks off at the hill, So.
Right. And so that's why I say go with the machete. I'm a fan of melee weapons. To me, is if you have to have, of course, to me, Jeff knows, Mike may not, because you probably haven't listened and kept up with my zombie survival guide. You're not prepared. You would know
six plans for this. So
I'm a fan of long, medium, short, and hand weapons. Carry a rifle for long, a shotgun for medium, a pistol for short, and a melee weapon. And to me, that's that's a 22 rifle, a 22 pistol, a 12 gauge sawed off shotgun with buckshot in it, and either a hatchet or a machete.
Whereas in contrast, I'm actually more of a Drew Carey type person, because I actually see this world as kind of falling back into medieval times. And I see how cumbersome the modern weapons such as guns can become at some point. I lean more towards the medieval weapons that are on this list. Like, I would say carry a crossbow, but I'm a fan of the katana, but then I know how to use one. So that's why. And I just want to add really quickly in the scene that they showed with Michonne. And when they did that whole slash thing and everything, I hope that everybody didn't miss the part where she twisted the blade to splash the blood off it.
Oh yeah, yeah, she did the flip.
That was so brilliant that they added that they made sure to add that little thing,
which is a traditional. That's actually I don't believe that's traditional with katanas. That's traditional with fencing, or with sabers.
No, it's traditional with katanas too, because they're so sharp and so slippery that you can actually do that with the blood. Is that you could just wave it really, do a quick twist, and the blood will just come right off of it and it's clean.
Oh, okay, because I know sabers had that blood channel in the center.
Yeah,
and that was the point of it, is that after you slash somebody, you brought it down and you gave it a little swipe, and that drove all the blood to the tip and off.
Yeah, with this one, you just twist the blade and it comes off like rain off of a good katana.
But yeah, like I say, for me personally, I've trained in the katana when I was in martial arts, but not long enough to feel proficient with it. And if I don't feel proficient with it, I'm going to say 90% of the people out there are just going to end up dying thinking that a katana is going to help them.
That's true. I mean, it's not that hard of a weapon to be able to appreciate. That's the thing. As long as you can appreciate it, whereas everybody has the belief with a machete, you can do anything, and you can't. So, but on that, let's move into Michonne and her katana.
Right. Michonne's such an interesting character in the comic books.
Yeah.
First of all, I got to say, one of my favorite parts of the comic books, although one of the hardest part was, let's just say, she takes a prize from the governor.
Yeah, that was a bit, that whole section was a little rough.
Yeah. Yes. little backstory on Michonne. Michonne was one of four children that included a brother and two sisters. She practiced fencing as a child and briefly picked up the hobby again when she was in college and studied law. After graduating and getting her degree, she became a successful attorney and married a man with whom she had two daughters. They lived an average middle-class lifestyle in a suburban neighborhood and often dealt with troublesome teenager next door who she swore had once killed their dog and destroyed their bushes with his katana sword. Wonder where she got that from. She spent much of her free time weightlifting and avidly following televised football. She eventually divorced her husband and at some point started dating another man named Mike. When the apocalypse began, she lost both her daughters, presumably at the hands of her zombified boyfriend and his best friend, who, oddly enough, ended up attacking her. But she was able to fend them off and control them with her neighbor's sword. She spent countless days alone, meandering around on foot in search of other survivors. And the two pets that she has is her boyfriend and his friend.
Oh, nice. See, I didn't remember, or actually, I don't think I've read enough into the comic books to know that part.
Well, some of that is actually, there was just recently, within the last, I want to say 6 months, and it may have been only like within the last 3 months, there was a about a 4-page or 6-page thing by Kirkman that they did in Playboy magazine, where it actually shows Michonne's beginning from the beginning of the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, and from what I know, you can still find that online in places.
I wouldn't doubt it. But yeah, it's like her boyfriend. I guess I didn't catch that she had kids though. So maybe I missed something, but her pets are, you know, the boyfriend and I think the neighbor.
Best friend. Yeah, the first two that attacked her, she fended them off with the katana blade by cutting their arms off.
And the lower jaw.
Lower jaw was later, but yeah.
Which is an awesome, you know, now that I realize that, and that's the whole point of the pets being there. That's pretty awesome. And then, of course,
Mike and Terry, that's their names.
But of course, the most important part about you telling us this backstory and making it so that we all know why the pets are there, which makes it great, because otherwise I thought it was weird. But is the fact that Danai looks, I mean, unlike the governor, yes. Danai actually looks like Michonne.
Yeah.
To a point. You know, I mean, I guess, you know, they did actually pretty well with many of the characters, having them look similar. Michonne definitely looks the closest to her character. Yeah. Or Danai, I mean, looks closest Danai. To her character. I'm still calling them by their character names.
It's their character names.
So I think Morgan was another one.
Morgan and Dwayne. Look really close to their
Dwayne, I guess. Morgan, I can't remember his name. He played on Jericho.
I forget his name all the time too. Which I can't believe I keep doing.
But you know, he looks really close to
But so here's the question that I have, and this was actually been, you know, quite a discussion that a lot of people have talked about, and I think we touched about this before on the show, is the idea of Michonne on a TV show. I mean that's really taking it. This is really taking the show to a comic level, a comic book level, a graphic novel level. It's because now we have a super, you know,
basically
hero.
A superhero.
Yeah, we have a superhero character. And a lot of the concerns that I've heard over and over again is the TV world, because up until this point, it was pretty much like even Drew Carey said on the show, is that these are real people dealing with a super situation. And it was easy to believe that they were all real people. Well, now we don't have a real person for all intents and purposes. So, I mean, how do you guys feel about, you know, do you really think this is going to be a good addition to the show? I mean, let's try to forget the fact that...
I think so, because here's the thing is, yeah, Michonne, you know, we kind of give it up that, you know, she's a, you know, kind of superhero-ish simply because of the Katana Blade, but I think more with her is her attitude, and as we find out, even, you know, when you read the comic books about her, is that the deeper you delve in, you find out she's just basically an average person that, because she's been alone this whole time, she's had to endure extraordinary things. And that's what made her, you know, so there's nothing ultra special about her except for her fighting skills.
Well, and, you know, yeah, she's got the pets, you know, which essentially help protect her from the other zombies. But that was something that they, Rick and Glenn, stumbled upon and tried to use in the first season, where they covered themselves with the dead guts. So they smelled the dead. She just took it instead of, and maybe if they weren't under such constant pressure, you know, trying to keep everybody alive, including the kids, you know, instead of covering themselves, you know, with guts and intestines and whatever, you know, maybe eventually Rick or somebody would have come up with the idea of, hey, let's take a walker, cut its arms or its arms off and make it harmless to us. But if we kept it around us, it would, you know, it would disguise us from the other walkers.
Yeah, to a point. And so, yeah, I mean, that. And so that's the thing is, when I look at her, I don't look at her being a superhero. I look at her being, you know, just somebody that, you know, basically, I, you know, more or less what Andrea is going to end up like, you know, a badass, yeah. But not a badass because, you know, she can do all these cool, you know, she's not like Spider-Man or something that can do flips through airs and everything.
Right. She becomes a badass out of necessity.
Right.
Yeah, I can see that. And I mean, I'm one of those people that when I know that like show is based on something else, that when I see a picture, especially like when you're watching a comic book movie or something like that, and this is one of those cases where you see a scene in the film that freezes on this one moment that looks exactly like a panel out of the comic book.
Right.
That's amazing to me. And speaking of Michonne, if you'd like to be one of Michonne's pets, how can you do that, Jason?
Oh, well, that is really simple.
Nice segue.
You kind of caught me off guard, though, but we do have a set that tells you how to do that.
For season three, we're sticking with the iconic theme of recreating a great moment from the show.
Sure.
And what we've done is we are going to recreate Michonne with her pets, but there will only be one pet, and visitors of the AMC booth will actually be able to walk up and put the collar and the chain around their neck and be the second pet.
So basically, for those of you jerks that are going to the San Diego Comic-Con.
To San Diego Comic-Con tomorrow.
Yes.
Bastards.
To us right now.
you can go to the AMC Walking Dead booth, and they have life-size... what are they? They're not wax figures. They're
statues.
Yeah, molded statues.
Synthetic.
Of Michonne and one of her pets, and then the other one with a pet with the head missing, and you can go up there and be the other pet. So I think that's awesome. I want to be a pet.
And did you hear about the contest that you did hear about it. You watched the same show I did. But you know, this is a nice segue into this one too. The Walking Dead comic book number 100. I just picked up my copy today because it's got covers by eight different artists, you know, well-known artists. I picked up my Todd McFarlane. You know, everybody should know him as, like, the creator of some of the greatest monster figures available out there. And, of course, Spawn.
McFarland.
I was just kidding.
Quit confusing things. Anyway, so I picked up my copy of that one. But if you'd like to get one of the special, extra special copies, like what Drew Carey got on The Talking Dead show, you have to survive running through a maze with a bunch of zombies following you at the San Diego Comic-Con at the AMC's
Bastards.
The Walking Dead.
Can you kick them in the nuts? I would be able to do it if I was allowed to kick them in the nuts.
Can I bring
See, there was
taser?
Actually Love's Dragon posted an article the other day about this, like some, I can't remember exactly where it was, but where you're supposed to be able to actually have, you know, go through some serious cardio. You get to go, you know, jogging through this situation with a bunch of zombies chasing you. And I was like, you know, well, I'm not quite in that shape anymore. So can I, like, you know, kick them, punch them, you know, while I'm at it?
I think that was on the TV show Royal Pains a couple weeks ago.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, they had like a marathon. And in this marathon, they had stages set up where zombies will chase you. And so, yeah, so that's one way that you can get that. Yeah, definitely go out, get the special 100 edition of the comic book.
I haven't read it yet. I just picked it up. But, and before we wrap into a bunch of other stuff, because I'm not sure where you want to go next, but I figured we'd get us back, you know, on track, which I'm sure you're going to do. But I know we cannot let this go by without you making comments about this. Let's talk about the weapons of season 3.
Oh, yes, definitely. some of the weapons that they brought out that I love. First of all, they have Rick's 45 back. That is such a kick-ass gun.
Yeah,
I love that.
Python, I know.
Rick's Python is just, that is so amazing. I just love the look and the feel of that. They've got Daryl's crossbow back, Michonne's katana, in which I love when they showed him, cutting with the katana. They're like, this is
the
real
one.
Yeah. and he cuts and he actually like hits it into the building. It cuts so good.
Yeah.
Another
takes
one
chip out of the building,
but then they're bringing out some other, some bigger weapons like a, machine gun. Which generally is not that good with zombies unless there's a horde of them because you tend to waste bullets. But it looked like an M16 to me, but I couldn't tell because they didn't show any close-ups to actually see if it was an M16 or something else with a similar stock and style.
Yeah.
And then a bazooka, and I don't know my bazookas that well.
Well, the RPG, yeah.
The RPG.
I don't know bazookas very well either, except that you're... You know, don't stand behind one when it's being fired.
Yeah.
That's all I really know. There was also that picture, though, on the wall.
I laughed so hard when they said, because I'm looking at that and I'm going, before they even said it, I went, is that a flashlight? Because I have. In fact, I'm holding it in my hand right now. They have a Stinger flashlight, which is the kind of flashlight that police officers tend to like to use. They're really bright. They're short. They're basically take a mag light, a giant mag light, and like shorten it into, you know, something that can fit easily in your hand. They basically took that and stuck it on the end of a semi-automatic pistol and to make it look like a silencer of some sort.
Yeah. I know. I wasn't quite sure what they were and what that was meant by that. I don't think it was actually intended to be a silencer because the way he made it sound like is that it was actually a fully homemade gun. And they just managed to use a flashlight as part of it.
I'm interested to see what they use that for, because a flashlight on the end of a semi-automatic, first of all, how do you keep it on there? But second of all...
Super glue.
Yeah, I guess that would work. It's not really going to silence anything. Once again, if you're going to silence a gun, you know, first of all, you can't really silence it. All you can do is muzzle compress it. But if you're going to do that... There's
Use
some poor man
nipple.
Ways that work well. A potato works fairly well. Just
duct
jam that
baby.
On the end of the gun. Duct tape actually doesn't work that good unless.
No,
you...
I mean you duct tape a baby bottle nipple.
Yeah, that can work.
That's what I've done.
What I always liked is putting a 2-liter bottle.
Oh yeah, that's pretty
taped
common,
on it because the expansion of the 2-liter bottle traps so much of the gases in there. that it just all bounces around and doesn't. So the 2-liter bottle, in my opinion, works the best. So, and that, and like I say, that's suppression. That's not silence, because you still have the bullet breaking the sound barrier. You would have to drop the bullet down to below, I think it's 1,200 feet per second.
Yeah, well, I killed a deer with a van at 55 miles an hour. So.
But what about a flamethrower with a bayonet attached?
Okay, a flamethrower with a bayonet attached would work great, unless they somehow came up behind you. Because then you've got this big, giant cherry bomb strapped to your back.
True.
It's very true.
So up until that point, I think a flamethrower would work well, especially when you're talking about a mass horde.
Yeah. Well, the problem with the flamethrower, and they actually showed that in that last episode, is zombies don't feel pain. So you've created, instead of zombies, you have flaming zombies coming after your ass.
Now you have flaming zombies.
Flaming zombies.
All right. Really quickly, I want to get into the news, and then I know we want to wrap this up. I did have a little bit of news I wanted to throw out there, which I know is also on Jason's list as well. The Walking Dead Facebook game, as I understand, is still under construction.
Yes. Yes, it is.
But there is a teaser on the Facebook page now if you want to see it. This is so basically the bastards are telling us that this is what we could be playing if they would ever give it to us. Activision is also in Terminal Reality reveal the Walking Dead video game.
It looks awesome. I honestly don't own a PlayStation 3 or a Xbox 360 or whatever it is. So I almost am tempted to get one for Christmas because the Walking Dead video game comes out in 2013.
Yes. Actually, see, that's, I wanted to throw that out there too, because, excuse me, I actually just downloaded and maybe they're talking about two completely different games, but just last night I downloaded episode 1 of the game that you can play that was announced like 6 months ago.
There is an online RPG game.
The Atlanta, something Atlanta game?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's first part is out, second part is out. There's going to be 3 more parts to this downloadable thing. And I'm just surprised that they didn't talk about that at all. They just, excuse me. Sorry, a little burpy here. but they didn't talk about, they were just talking about, I'm assuming, the console version or the physical version of a game that's going to be coming out next year.
Right. Well, what's great about the new game coming out by Activision in 2013 is you actually play as Daryl, as he and Merle are surviving the initial outbreak. Which nice. I love the concept.
So it's a prequel.
Yeah, I love the concept of not having you in with the other survivors, that you're one person on your own trying to survive.
And it's a side story. That's the thing that I like about it, is that it's more of a side story about two characters that we do want to know more about, especially Daryl. I mean, everybody loves Daryl at this point.
Right. And I got a feeling Daryl's going to be number 2 this year, isn't he? I mean, he has to be number 2.
Yeah, he's pretty much worked his way up to that point. And he seems to have no problem with it by the looks of it. Like he keeps saying, Rick's never done any wrong by me, so why should I not back him up? So
the only problem I see coming is with the Merle coming back, some sort of conflict arising with that.
Yeah, but I think, well, like I've mentioned on the show before, and I'll say again, is that I do think that Daryl has kind of stepped up as his own person to the point where he's not going to let his older brother beat him around anymore.
Right, he's no longer in his brother's shadow. I think before, up until now, he was Merle's younger brother. Merle was the older one. He knew better. I think now he's going to realize that he knows better than Merle did.
Right, and I agree with that, because of that whole when he got stuck himself with the crossbow bolt, but then he kept seeing Merle. He kept going anyway. Yeah, and he kept, he kind of came out of Merle's shadow, but you see this a lot of times in television and movies where person becomes their own person, but then in this case Merle comes back. I can see maybe.
It's kind of like going to a high school reunion and somehow you end up back in the same.
Right. I can see Daryl kind of going, stepping, okay, Merle's here, you know, and
yeah, for a while,
fall back, maybe. Yeah, fall back into that pattern, but then eventually, yeah, stepping, you know, realizing, no, I was right when I, you know.
Well, especially if it's the same old, if it's the same old badass, you know, jerk off Merle that we've seen before, and he isn't really a kindler, gentler one, that's really going to push Daryl in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely.
All right.
And last but not least on the news front, I just want to make sure to warn everybody out there, if you're on Dish Network, guess what? You don't get to see this fall. That's right. You're not going to get AMC, so you're not going to see The Walking Dead. That's a good time now to like change to somebody else. Yeah.
And we're not paid by DirecTV or anyone to say that.
That's why I never mentioned him, but you did. So maybe you are getting paid. You're a secret agent.
You know what? Hey, I have DirecTV. I would love for them to, you know, pay my bill for me. Because they charge me too much as it is, I think. But
there you go. And Mike, I want to thank you for joining us this time. It's been great having you in there.
I was glad to join.
All right. I think with that, I should start the music.
You should start the music.
All right. That was our podcast for The Walking Dead Week in Review, Season 3 Preview. Want to tell you to get a hold of us. Call us at 503-454-6941 and tell us your predictions on Season 3. Email us at feedback@creepercast.com. You can send us a tweet if you want on Twitter. Keep it under 140 characters at twitter.com/creepercast. Or, you know what, just head over to Facebook at facebook.com/creepercast where you can leave a much longer message. We also have two giveaways, what's that called? Sweepstakes, shall we say, that where you can win some Creepercast swag from the Creepercast store simply by going to creepercast.com/iTunes for our regular Creepercast iTunes page and leave us a comment there about and some stars about the Creepercast, good, bad, or otherwise, and then email us your name on what you use so that we know who to contact when the time comes. Or head over to creepercast.com/TWD iTunes for the Walking Dead Week in Review iTunes page. And you can leave us comments there. Two chances to win. And you get to choose any one item out of the Creepercast store. Did I leave anything out, Jeff?
No, you didn't, except for that I was going to throw in there, and this is going to be news to you too as well, is I'm thinking that we might try to do a show for at least once a month between now and October. So if you have any ideas of something we can talk about, I mean, I have a few, but, you know, I would love to hear what the fans have to say about that. Give us contact us at feedback@creepercast.com and let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about.
Excellent. Mike, anything you got?
That's it for me, dude.
All right. Thank you guys for joining us. I want to thank everybody in the chat room. You guys were awesome. We have Dr. B in there, Killer Wilba, our friend, our Aussie friend. Dr. B, by the way, is from New Zealand, so we're international now. We got Loves Dragons, Nesabu, a couple names I can't pronounce, and a bunch of other people that joined us for the first time. Hey, you guys rocked the chat room, and don't forget, join us Wednesdays at 7 o'clock for the Walking Dead Week in Review, and Pacific time, by the way, and Wednesdays at 8 o'clock Pacific time for the Creepercast. All right, see you guys next time on the Walking Dead Week in Review.
Brains.
Burn it down. Burn it down. Burn it down.
Thank you for listening to my uncle's podcast.